What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
3, 2, 1. That seems off, but I guess they make it work, right?
They make it work.
Are you recording?
Yes, we're recording. I'm recording.
All right. Well, you're by yourself, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I should do a regular intro, even though I think we should leave that part in because it's fun and behind the scenes.
Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey everyone, welcome to Movie Crush, Friday interview editions. And if you heard a nice lady speaking on the other end of the mic, that is Miranda Hawkins, who you don't know yet, but you soon will.
Hi.
Say hi. So Miranda is what are the official titles these days? I don't even know. I know you're a producer.
I'm a producer. I still keep the title as journalist because some of the shows I've worked on still require some of those skills. So I still say I'm a journalist and a producer.
Oh, cool. Very nice. So Miranda came to our network. Geez, it's been a while now, hasn't it?
2.5 years now.
What?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I know. The other day I was like, oh my goodness, because I started right around my birthday. So that's like, you know, every birthday I have, I'm like, that's a 2-year mark.
Yeah.
And we've moved past that by a few months.
We're in the post-birthday mode.
Post-birthday mode.
Yeah, so you came to us, though, kind of at a, it wasn't a weird time, but it was you and, like, I feel like 4 or 5 other people that were brought in all at once and then sort of sequestered on this team that didn't have a lot to do with kind of everything else. You were all working on your own stuff with one of the gentlemen who used to kind of run our network.
Yeah.
I'm trying to say this all in the right way.
I think you're doing a pretty good job. Basically, we all came from different backgrounds, and uh-huh. I think only one of us had previous experience with making a podcast. And so we were all essentially thrown to the wolves and making this very big podcast. It's like, okay, here you go. And you have 4 months to do this. And we're all like, okay.
And that was Atlanta Monster, right?
No, it was the second one. It was Monster the Zodiac Killer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But 3 of us came from journalism backgrounds, and 1 of us came from more of a music engineering background. So, yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of fun, but it was definitely figuring it out as we went.
Well, the weird thing is that we've worked together for 2.5 years, and I don't even know you that well. So this will be great for everyone because I can get to know you as the listeners do. Which one were you? Were you music background or journalism?
Journalism. My background is actually investigative journalism. That's what I really wanted to do. But I had actually quit being a reporter, but I had moved over into a different position. So I moved over into the position of working on a arts and culture program here in Atlanta. And I was a producer for that when I came over here. So yeah, it was a little bit of a wayward stray over here, but yeah, and that's,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's my background for the most part.
Where did you, do you move to Atlanta from somewhere?
No, I've been in Atlanta. I've been in Atlanta for 10 years. I've been inside the perimeter for 6 now. I went to Georgia State. That's where I graduated from. Yeah, and I graduated with a journalism degree. But I worked at WABE, which is one of the NPR affiliates. And I was there I was there 6 months after graduating. And I was there for 2.5 years before I came over here. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Originally Richmond, no, well, not Richmond. I was born in Richmond. Originally Fredericksburg, Virginia. So I was up there for 15 years. And then my mom moved me down to Rabun County, Georgia, if anyone knows where that is. It's in the middle of nowhere.
I know where it is.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, but most people don't. I normally have to, if basically for those who don't, it is the northeastern corner of Georgia. It is 12 miles from the border of North and South Carolina.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah, it's lovely to visit, not to move a 15-year-old with nothing to do.
No, I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you. Just so everyone knows what's going on in real time, too, I think this will come out probably next Friday, but as we are recording right now, it is, just to gauge our mood, it is the day after the Georgia Senate election. So I'm a little tired. I'm a little hungover. I am flying high. And right now it is literally 1:15 when, you know, Congress has convened to certify or not certify. I know it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
to certify Biden's win. So it's just a big day.
It's a huge day. I feel like that's all anyone, you know, that's all what's on our minds, and especially Georgia. Like, we've had so much riding on Georgia. Like, I never expected us to be the battleground this election season.
And I know. I thought we were one early is what I thought.
Yeah. And honestly, like, while I'm definitely one of those people who has, like, posted every day, like, vote, you need to make sure to vote, and, like, posting all my voting selfies, I'm also very tired of all of the, hi, Winifred, have you voted today? Like,
I know. I did phone banking, too. I was one of those people, but... I am ready to get past this.
Yes.
I'm ready to not get texts. They got Emily and I, my wife, switched out somehow because I'm getting messages and texts to Emily on my phone. Not sure how that happened. But yeah, I'm ready for that to stop.
Yeah. I've been Winifred this whole time. So that's been my, like, I guess my alter ego is Winifred now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I just haven't. I'm fine with this.
That might have to be your new nickname. what are you working on these days? Anything that you can talk about or plug?
So I'm working on all of Aaron Mankey's shows. You've heard of American Shadows, that's one of the shows I work on with Lauren Vogelbaum, who is absolutely amazing. It's really nice, Lauren's because I haven't got to work with another woman, really, as far as like a host or producer. I'm pretty much on a male dominant team. And then, let's see, we're working on the second season of Strange Arrivals, which... Nice. Yes, is like all about aliens and things like that. And I work with Toby Ball on that. He's a host of that, and he's absolutely lovely. And then there's a few other things I can't really talk about that are like pre-production, but working on some scripts there. And we have a lot coming down the pipeline, but there's going to be a lot more, like, as this year unfolds, you'll hear about a lot more. But at the moment, it's all pre-production stuff or behind the scenes. So
that's awesome. I mean, do you like the job? Have you taken to it?
I have. I love it because there's so much more creativity involved that I never expected. So one of my things is I loved being a reporter. It's all I wanted to do. And I got that, right? I got that right out of college. I was living my dream job. Unfortunately, sometimes dream jobs don't pay you a living wage. Yeah. So sure. I was like, wait a minute. I'd also
Cub
be a
reporter. No good.
Yeah. I mean, I would go back one day maybe, but not right now. But it's also like there's only so much creativity you can have with it because you're reporting. And then I moved to producing for City Lights with Lois Reitzes, and I love that too, but it was still kind of reporting. Yeah, I worked with Lois.
She's great.
She's amazing. And I was only with her for a few months before I ended up getting this position. But with this one, it's like you can take the reporting and like the hard facts, and in that aspect, you can still have more creativity with storytelling and how you tell it because you don't have to have like – the big thing up front with your first sentence, right? You can, you know, you can lead it, make it a bit more storytelling.
Yeah,
but there's
yeah.
also creativity in sound design. I worked on 13 Days of Halloween, that 3D show that came out last year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I had never in my life would have imagined me working on something that was like Ambio, trying to figure out, like, does it, you know, is it coming from the left or the right, like far away, you know, close up, and like how to make those sounds work. But the creativity that goes within that was a lot.
Oh, the 3D
learned.
Audio thing?
Yes.
Wow, that is so cool. I mean, is that the future, or is that just going to be sort of like 3D movies and like a part of the future?
I think it'll be more of a part of the future because mm-hmm. realistically, it doesn't work for everything. If you really want it to work, it's, I don't know, there are certain elements that you need to make it really sound the way you want it to sound. Like, you can't just throw it into everything. It's just not going to work that way. So it works best when, like, when the listener is central and things are moving around the listener, more so than, like, walking steps this way or walking that way. It just doesn't work the same.
Yeah, I mean, I guess tell everyone what that is, because I'm sure a lot of people haven't listened to anything in the 3D audio space. So just sort of what's the overview there?
So the overview is, imagine that you're sitting on a park bench and your eyes are closed and you're just kind of hearing the sounds around you, right? Like kids playing in the background, maybe to your left, and it sounds far away. You can hear the wind like rustling through the leaves. And while it's like circling all around you, maybe you hear like the couple of leaves on the sidewalk right in front of you. So it's putting mm-hmm. those things into spatial, like from the listener, like spatially where it is from you, to make it sound like you're actually there. It's a lot of space and like different sounds. Or like if you're inside, imagine, I had never thought about this before, but like at this moment, me talking to you, I'm sitting in a boxed room that's a whole bunch of panels to try to, you know, keep the sound in and keep other sounds out. Mm-hmm. So it sounds different than if you're walking down a concrete hallway. And those are the things you have to take into consideration when you're making 3D audio, is like, you know, what does it sound like spatially? What are like the area sounds, that kind of thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was.
That's very cool.
It was a lot. It was a lot of work, honestly. I feel bet. Like all of us were, it was a major learning curve for the entire team.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's really, really cool. But it sounds like kind of something that once you get the hang of it, the pace might pick up.
Absolutely. I believe we're going to do another season. I would love to do another season, because now that we've done it and I feel like we got more of a hang on it, like it would go a lot faster and we could do a bit more with it.
That's awesome. Another cool thing about our job is we have always been given a bunch of freedom to create stuff on our own and pitch, and producers coming up with their own shows. Do you have a nice voice? Do you have any aims to host and do your own thing?
I do. I absolutely do. It's more finding something that I really have the passion and the drive behind. I have a couple ideas. I just haven't had a lot of time to sit and develop them.
That's the rub.
That's the thing, right? Because you have so many other things going on. But it is something that is kind of in the background on a constant basis, that I have a little setup at home as well. And when I have time, I sit and I visit those ideas and try to bring them more to fruition. So one of these days, hopefully soon. But other than I'm good with visiting, like with you and, you know, working on sound design and things of that nature. Actually, do you want to hear something kind of funny?
Yes.
I never wanted to be in audio.
Really?
Never. I like swore up and down I would never be in audio. I wanted to be a writer, strictly writing. I wanted to like write for
that
a newspaper. Yep. And then I ended up getting an internship at ABE. And then it turned out I write really well for the ear. And then I ended up getting a contract position with them. And the next thing I know, I'm here. And I'm like, I never would imagine this. And now my job is all audio.
Yeah, it's a good network to be on, I think. I think there's a lot of opportunity. And I think having like a solid writing background, I mean, that helps in every job. I was an English major and everyone was like, what are you going to do, teach? And I was like, well, maybe, but it is also really good to be a good writer. I mean, that helps in any job you could have, is to be able to write something, even if it's just good email correspondence with colleagues. Like, it stands out if you're a good writer, I think.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. I mean, writing's definitely a great skill to have no matter what you do. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we jump into silver linings, I think maybe let's hear like two personal things about you that might inform who you are, so everyone can know who Miranda is as we dive into this movie. Up to you. They could be silly.
Or
serious.
Silly or serious? Well, hold on. I have to think about this real quick. I guess one thing is I love my dog, but we fight a lot. He's a Chihuahua Corgi mix.
Let's hear about the dog. What kind of dog?
He's a Chihuahua Corgi mix.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. And that's a big personality and a little like 12, 13 pound animal. But like, it's funny because when I got him, I was like, you know how they say dogs and owners mimic each other? And he would do certain things. I'd be like, bro, I know I'm extra, but I'm not that extra. And then as time has gone on, sometimes I put my head in my hands and I'm like, oh, God, I am that extra.
Is bro his name?
No, it's Frankie with two E's.
It's what?
Frankie, but with two spelled with two E's. Sometimes in Frankenfurter or Franks or Frankenstein. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all the nicknames.
All the nicknames. He has to have them.
No, that's great. I had a friend who had a dog named Bro. That's why I asked.
Oh, did you?
I thought that would be pretty funny. Come here, Bro. And what else? You got one other one? I know something, but go ahead.
The first time I ever cooked a pizza in the oven, I read the directions thoroughly. And I'm one of those people, if it's the first time I do something, like I go line by line, I need someone to tell me exactly how to do it. And I read them exactly the way it said to do. And I put the pizza in the oven. And at the time, I was in a short stint living at home for about 2 months, moving places. Mm-hmm. And next thing I know, I hear my mom yell my name, Miranda Lee. My middle name's Lee. And I was like, what? And she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm cooking a pizza. And she goes, you don't put it in there with the cardboard.
I did that once.
And I was like, I put it in there with the cardboard because I thought the pizza was going to melt through the cracks.
No, I did that once by accident.
Okay.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Okay, well, yeah.
We have something in common. Miranda Lee Hawkins, you sound like a country singer.
Oh, dear, I know. Definitely not, but that's okay.
The other thing I was going to say I know about you because we're Facebook friends is that you roller skate.
Oh, yeah. That is my newest and most loved passion. I am out on quads.
So that's the thing now again, right?
Yes, it is definitely the thing. Roller skating has just like... Wow, there's been like such an upswing. Everyone's doing it because like COVID happened and everyone was like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
So like it's great because it's outside, you know, and you can skate with other folks and everyone wears our masks and, you know, and there's just so much. But yeah, I picked up quad skating specifically. So I've been doing jam skating and working on a little bit of aggressive skating, which is like the ramps and such. Uh-huh. And then I've started to do trail skating, which is really good at building up muscle to do the other types of skating. So
fun.
I love it.
I see those pictures in the videos and I'm just like, I want to get out there with Miranda and break legs.
Come on. You can do it. Honestly, anytime anyone's like, I want to do it, I'm like, come on, I'm ready. Anytime you're ready.
That's great. That's so cool. I love it when an old thing becomes new again and people like bring these fads back in style and it's good exercise and I'm sure empowering and fun and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's good for the brain too.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have like one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations solutions that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
All right, so you picked Silver Linings Playbook.
Yes.
The great, great, great movie from 2012 from writer-director David O. Russell, one of my favorite directors, a member of what I call the 100% Club. He's never made a bad movie, and he's in rare company as directors go. I think every single one of his movies has been great. But this was based on the 2008 novel from Matthew Quick, The Silver Linings Playbook, which I didn't know much about until I read up on it today. A lot of big differences from the movie. I'm not sure how much you know about the book.
Honestly, so I did a little bit of research myself. I didn't really know that there was a book. I should have, because most of the time a movie like this comes from a book directly.
Yeah.
But no, I wasn't aware that there was a book. So I looked over some quotes and the quotes seemed to be different, but I'm not sure of the differences themselves. I just fell in love with the movie and I was good with that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of want to read the book now, but it was like in the book, the dance competition was sort of earlier. And a lot of stuff follows, and like new characters in the movie that weren't in the book at all. The football thing is played up in the movie, which wasn't as big a deal in the book. He has, I think, just suffered from traumatic brain injury in the book, and not, they didn't specify any kind of specific mental illness, whereas the movie really leans into, in a way that I think is really, really great, bipolar disorder. And, there was another couple of things too. I think he traveled away somewhere in the book and came back, and just, you know, like books, it's always like a lot more going on. But I think David O. Russell really like hit on something with basing this movie. It's sort of a movie about mental illness, and not just with Brad Cooper, but with Jennifer Lawrence and with his father.
Yeah.
And like all the characters, his best friend, everyone seems to be, if not suffering from some kind of real mental illness, just suffering in some kind of way in their head.
No, I 100% agree with that. That's one of the reasons I love it so much, is because I feel like it's one of the most accurate portrayals of mental illness, with Bradley Cooper, who plays Pat, his bipolar, and then Tiffany, Jennifer Lawrence, hers is depression. His dad, they reference OCD. You know, I'm not sure, but supposedly along those lines. It's weird, though, with his best friend. The dynamic there is his best friend doesn't necessarily like come across as actually having a mental illness, but it's like he's wrestling with his own stuff. But yet at the same time, he's like, but Pat, you know, you have your stuff, like you're the crazy one. Or he never directly says that, but it just shows like even if you don't have a mental illness, it's like he's still like suffering from his own just daily life, you know?
Yeah. And you know, this movie is so much about the struggles that we all kind of go through in different ways. That's, by the way, that Ronnie, his best friend, John Ortiz, really great, great role for him. This movie is great in that it's so funny and so heartwarming and romantic, but, so hard to watch and so horrifying and sad. I mean, he really pulls the emotional strings, David O. Russell, in this movie to like the fullest, I think.
No, he absolutely does. I don't don't even know, like, I think the first time I watched it, I might have cried a little bit, but the more I watch it, like, I don't ever really cry anymore. I actually just really lean into it. Like, I know certain scenes are supposed to be really intense, but I think those are actually my favorite scenes. I think it's the scenes that are quieter, like, so, for example, the scene where he's trying to find his wedding tape and he can't, and it just escalates and escalates and escalates. And I know this is a little weird, but I find it how they did it was slightly humorous, where it's intense, but you don't feel like so overwhelmed. It's really not until the next morning where it's that quiet peacefulness, and like you see him like looking at his medication and he's about to take it, and the family is like dealing with like understanding like this big thing just happened. And I think that's where you really feel the emotion, is the next day. It's like in the moment when it's happening, it's just reaction, reaction, reaction. And like he's like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And he knows like something's wrong, but they can't stop it and they can't stop it. And then it's in that peacefulness and that quietness that it's like, oh, that was a really big moment that really hit. And that's where I think where I feel the most emotion from it. And that's where you're like, oh man, you know, that feeling of the next day of like, that shouldn't have happened. That shouldn't have happened.
No, absolutely. That's a really good point. I think David O. Russell is, in a lot of his movies, he's really masterful at chaos and these really chaotic, intense scenes. And I think a really smart way to follow something like that is by making it super quiet, pulling it all back, because like I found myself like breathing so intensely during those scenes. It's a lot to handle. Without getting into too many specifics, there's a situation in our sort of extended personal life with my wife and I, of someone that's been going through a really bad thing for the past year, not COVID related. It's kind of sucks that it's corresponding with that because it's harder to get help and all that.
Yeah.
But dealing with medication and all this stuff that we didn't really know much about until we were faced with having to deal with this and assist with this. So I'm a crier. I'm an emotional guy. I was pretty wrecked watching a lot of this movie today, and a lot of the scenes before that didn't hit home were really hitting home. That scene where they were talking about the medications at the dinner table, it was really funny. It's played for laughs. But then once you've been in around situations where people are medicated, and medication can be great and save people's lives, but it's also a tricky road. And that was a really tough scene for me to watch today.
Yeah. So actually, about my personal life is I am bipolar. I was diagnosed a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Oh,
and my
mom
was bipolar. So I grew up with a parent who was bipolar already. And I knew I was bipolar all my life, but it was manageable with quotation marks around it. So, but then I actually had a psychotic episode because I was put on something I shouldn't have been put on. And I thought someone had poisoned my water and my food. And from that point, it broke my brain to where like I had to get put on medication. And so for me, it's been trying to figure out the right medications and like seeing the psychiatrist and therapist. So when I see the scene of them talking about their medication, I've had that conversation with my friends, and I actually love it because it's like really nice just to be like able to talk about it openly without there being like any judgment. And then like seeing him, like when he has these scenes of intensity, like that's why I think I love this movie so much, because I'm like, that's what it's really like. It's people mistake bipolar as like, oh, you're just super happy, or you're super sad, or you're whatever. And I'm like, no, it's this intense emotions that you do have to find a strategy for, because you feel things differently and you're going to react differently. And like, so that's one of the reasons like I really react to this movie. And when I watch it, I actually find a lot of peace with it, because I'm like, yep, that's what it's like. Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've had that conversation.
Yeah. Holy cow. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. I love this movie so much. Listen,
Well, I mean, it does put a real face on things, and like I think too many times, any sort of mental issues in movies are, it's just done wrong. You know, it's either played for laughs in the wrong way, or it's dramatized in the wrong way. And I don't have a lot of experience with bipolar from friends and family on a very personal level, but I've studied it with Stuff You Should Know. We did an episode on it, and this always just struck me as a movie that kind of hit the right tone. It's like intense emotion, dealing like on a day-to-day basis with yourself.
Yeah. When he talks about like white knuckling.
Having to manage that.
Yeah. When he talks about white knuckling, I'm like, oh yeah, buddy. I totally get it. Like
that shot of his hands when he's in the doctor's office.
Yeah. And he's just like holding on for dear life. And sometimes that's what it feels like. And it's just like, that's why, again, that one, that's my favorite scene is the him looking for the video. And when he talks to a psychiatrist, and psychiatrist is like, do you think that you did that because you're feeling this emotion and this was your response to it and you didn't know how to handle that feeling? You have to have a strategy. And I think that is like one of the clearest ways of showing what bipolar really is, of being like, he wasn't like freaking out or he's not crazy. He just like had this intense emotional response because like he wasn't sure what was happening. And so that's what happened. And like, and then Tiffany with like her depression and everything, the way she handles things, kind of the same thing. Like they both have their triggers and they're trying to figure things out.
Well, it's one of my favorite kinds of movies too. And it can take many forms. It can be a couple of nerd outcasts. It can be a movie like this, like where two sort of misfits find each other.
Yeah.
And fit together so well. It's just, I love it more than anything as a sort of a movie plot.
And also they're just kind of great together. Like
the chemistry is amazing.
Yeah. Like the two of them are just absolutely phenomenal. But yeah, it is. And it's different because it's like they are misfits in a certain way, but they're not. They're both just trying to like find their way, like find their own reality and the reality that everyone has created for them. You know, when she talks about, but we're not liars. You're lying. Yeah. But, you know, and it's like that is the reality. And they're having to, you know, everyone else is saying, well, you're crazier. You know, you're from the loony bin. And they're like, no, this is our reality. And like it just doesn't fit what your reality is. So,
yeah. And he even has that one great line toward the end when and I love movies too, where these sort of just odd people from different backgrounds all come together in this weird sort of group. And he's got, you know, his mom and his dad, then his brother is introduced, and then his doctor is hanging out with him, and he's got his kind of funny friend. And then Chris Tucker is there, who's just great in this movie. And Randy, you know, the crazy, you know, friend that bets all the bets. And
but
he has that great line when he says, you know, maybe, and it kind of gets lost because it's another kind of semi-chaotic scene, but he's like, maybe we're all the ones who see something, you know, maybe it's all of us that are onto something and you guys don't even know.
Yeah, no, that is a fantastic line because sometimes it like feels that way, but it is, that's such a good line. Ugh, sorry. I'm just like sitting with it because I'm like, it again, all these things like hit home so hard.
I know David O. Russell is a big advocate for mental illness and does a lot of work with that. So I'm not sure what his background is or how it affects him personally in his life or family or loved ones, but he clearly has made this movie for that reason.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. And he actually did an interview with NAMI. NAMI is like one of the groups, if you suffer from mental illness, that you can go to the groups. I actually tried one of their sessions, but the people who were going at the time when I went were in a different category, like as far as like the help that they needed compared to like where I was. So,
right.
But yeah, he actually did an interview with them, which I thought was really cool that he sat down and took that time. So
yeah,
no. And I really appreciate him making this movie, but I don't know. It's just like you have like this whole movie, which is about mental illness and everything else. But then you also have like the lightheartedness of it, like with Danny showing up, and you know, interspersedly throughout the movie, who like,
he's so good in this. I wish he would do more roles like this.
Honestly, me too. But his whole thing about having the hairline and like, I was just like, dude, like, I don't know. He cracks me up, but I love it because he's there just to show like, you know, like a friendship kind of thing. He's not there for any other reason than just being like, he's like Bradley Cooper's friend in this. And like, he just adds like this extra element. And I don't know. He's one of my favorites, honestly.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And he, I mean, a couple of scenes stand out with him. Obviously, the first one when he just sort of, you know, breaks out of the mental hospital and catches a ride. And he's always sort of escaping and being brought back. But I love how the family, and I've known households like this. I lived in New Jersey for a little while after college. And I feel like this movie was a lot like those, you know, sort of suburban Philadelphia is basically New Jersey. And I knew a lot of families like this where they just had an open door at their house and anyone sort of welcome. And they had these sort of big crazy scenes with all these, you know, kids, friends and neighbors. And like, what's this guy even doing here? Who is he? Like that kind of thing. But mom will still, you know, make everyone dinner, like even if she doesn't know who all's there. And this movie, I just really love their household scene there. It's complicated, you know, like that very first scene with when he comes back with De Niro. There's that's so well acted, and there's so much in it that's not said, but you sort of get it. Like they love each other, but it's so fraught with layers and layers of complications, you know?
Yeah. And like, I noticed that like one of the first things you see is his pictures, you know, not on the wall portraits anymore. Yeah. And that automatically gives you an idea. But then when like De Niro was like, you okay? Like, you know, and then automatically leading into, you know, like, I'm glad you're back, all this other stuff. But I also think it hints at how mental illness can also be like familial. And like how family is like, what I like about this is that the family didn't really gloss over it. They weren't really scared to talk about it. Like they addressed it, but at the same time, it was mildly taboo. And it's a weird line that they walked. And I'm not sure like how they did it, but they did a really good job where it was like, you know, we're here for you. We love you. You know, you have the support, but at the same time, it was still just kind of like, you know, but you got to take your meds. Like, you got to, like, you know,
or you got to go to therapy if you're going to live with us. Like, his mom was not having it.
No, she was not having it.
She's great. Jackie Weaver, I think she's British.
She was fantastic.
Yeah, they got nominated, I think, for the first time since Reds in 1981. Best actor, best supporting actor, best actress, best supporting actress, all nominated from the same film. And I think Jennifer Lawrence is the only one who won, and she was great. I just wish I would have loved to have seen Bradley Cooper win. He was so phenomenal in this movie.
Honestly, he definitely deserved to win, especially the way his eyes were. He like nailed it. I love his eyes. Yeah, the look in his eyes from beginning to end is just absolutely phenomenal. I don't know. He should have won.
Yeah, that scene where he, maybe I'll look up and see who won that year, but when he, the running motif is great with that fucking trash bag, but when he is running to the high school and it's funny, but it's also just so heartbreaking that principal or the teacher, whoever that was just so scared. And, you know, he goes to hug her and she's just like fucking frightened out of her life.
Yeah.
But he's so trying to tell her that he's okay. And he says, look at my eyes, look how clear they are. And he's so upright then. And I feel so bad that his past has followed him like this, you know?
Yeah. And that's like, I think an important statement though, is like in situations like this, as people who are bipolar, you know, something happens, they have the reactive, you know, not to the extent of like beating someone almost to death, but just in general. Mm-hmm. And then it gets stuck with them. And then all of a sudden they're like pegged as you're crazy or you're this or you're that. And people don't take the time to understand like, no, it was this intense thing that happened and people are working through it. It's just, you know, it's not the same. And so I think that was a really good example of that where it's like, hey, I'm, you know, I'm okay. But she was like, oh dear, no. I mean, it was hilarious, absolutely. But at the same time, like it was a good way to show that without being too heavy.
Yeah, I think so. And so much of this movie is about those labels, because Jennifer Lawrence is fighting her own label as, you know, the former slut is what she called herself, because she her husband died and she handled that in a way that she dove into bed with people seemingly randomly from her work. And I guess got fired for that. Is that?
Yeah, she got fired for it. Yeah, because she was like, I slept with everybody at work.
Yeah, but you know, people do those things. Like when you're suffering like that and she's in depression, I've heard about people doing those things, and that doesn't mean that's who they are, you know?
Exactly. And that's another thing. And I think that's what was great with the two characters is Bradley Cooper's character saw that. And that way the scene when the guy came up to the door at her parents' house and he was like, you know, with a broken wing. Yeah. He's like, with the broken wing, you know, I think she's on the mend. It was so sweet. And the guy has like,
she's healing right now. You got to let her heal. He kind of strong arms him though. It's great. He's like, I'm going to walk you back down here.
Yeah. Just the way he talks though. Sometimes in this movie, it's just like this direct, like, no, this is what we're doing. Like, come on. Like, that no filter, and, you know? And then of course she comes like running after him and I can't help but I love her jacket. The entire movie, I just wish I had that jacket. But like, she like throws on her jacket and like her tennis shoes and I was like, okay, here's this thing. But when he does that, I don't know. He's absolutely fantastic. But the way people handle things, it's always going to be different for everyone, but people do have to remember that that's not who they are. And that's, I think that's what gets lost a lot with mental illness, you know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's very easy to label somebody, and even if you're not saying the words, to just sort of put someone in a box in your head. And I think this movie did a really good job at showing the different layers that people have, no matter what their deal is.
Yeah. And also, like, people, like, falling back. Like, that's another thing is, when people create coping mechanisms that aren't healthy, or in general just coping mechanisms, and something happens and it puts them out, then they tend to fall back. Like, I won't, you know, give it all away, but when she sees something she doesn't want to see at the end, and she gets her feelings hurt, and so she goes back into, like, you know, I guess what she would call, like, the slut mode of, like, going to the bar and grabbing a drink and automatically talking to the guy. Yeah. You know, it's like she immediately fell back on that coping mechanism until, you know, Cooper comes up to her and is like, hey, we got to do this thing. And she's like, I think you're the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And he's like, well, good for you. And, like, let's go. And just completely won't let her do it. He's like, nope, we're not doing that.
Yeah. And he has this thing where it's he has the former, or I guess still wife, they're not divorced yet, but Nikki, and it's one of those, and I've seen it in other movies, and I think it's pretty effective, is when it's the idea of her more than her. And she represents this thing. She's a symbol in his life, of if I can just get back to that. And that's who she represents to him. And, you know, I think the movie does a good job of sort of teasing that out to the very, very end. It's a wonderful surprise, and we'll talk about the end, you know, later at more at length, but it's, I thought, even watching it today, it's been quite a few years since I've seen it. I was like, what happens there with Nikki at the dance? I don't even remember. And he did the Lost in Translation move, you know, you whisper, you don't know. I love that.
Yeah, no, it was absolute. Honestly, the first time I saw it, I had the same idea. You know, I've seen it so many times now, like, I know what's going to happen, but it is one that kind of caught me. I feel like I'm at a point now where I can normally guess the ending of things. So when something catches me off guard, because there's, like, only so many stories. So when something catches me off guard, I'm always like, heck yeah, you did it. And this movie is one of those that did it for me.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries. from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I also, another favorite thing that I've seen David O. Russell do before and in other films, I think it's just a kind of a more clever way of telling a story is like you don't get his actual diagnosis until about 15 minutes into the movie in that first meeting with his doctor. And you don't, like, things are told out of order. You know, something's going on. You get the diagnosis later. You know, something happened with his wife, like the incident. And then that's paid off a little bit later. And I think dropping things in there in sort of a nonlinear way, like these plot points, instead of sort of the tired way of like at the beginning of the movie, we tell you sort of everything you need to know in the first 7 minutes.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I actually didn't really think about that too much. I just remember like watching it for the first time and seeing he's in that institution and then everything else. And then next thing I know. But yeah, you're right. They do take their time with unfolding. It's bit by bit. And even like, you know, with Tiffany's husband and other things like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, with pieces are just dropped throughout. So you don't really know everything. I like that a lot. I prefer it when stories do that rather than just giving you everything. Because if you give you everything, then kind of what's the point to keep going? You're like, all right, well, I know what's happening.
Yeah. And there's something, you know, you don't find out until probably the 3/4 point what happened to her husband and how he actually died, even though he asks her that dinner scene. That dinner scene is so great where he first meets her, their first meeting and like how they're talking to each other. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, that no. And then she's like, you're going to walk me home or what? And he's right. Like, what? And he's like so awesome. Confused. And he's just like, wait, I don't know what's happening. But it's also funny because what is it? Julia Childs? Is that her?
No.
Not Childs.
She's the cook.
Yeah.
Julia Stiles.
Julia Stiles. Okay. Julia Stiles. She plays. I hate her character.
I know.
She's very hateable. That's the whole point. But like, I never thought I could hate someone as much as I hate her. Like the whole way that she is like with her sister and like everyone else, yeah. She's just horrendous. And like, I don't know, her showing off her house and like the whole.
Oh God, the iPod stuff, the ports.
The iPod.
So obnoxious.
And she, how Tiffany is like, but we're in the bathroom. Like, why are you going to show us the iPod port in the bathroom? And then the whole, what was the other one? The like the fireplace. And I was just like, this is just ridiculous.
That scene was really funny, though. She's like, it's one of those things at the morgue that you slide the body in. He's like, how would you even get a body in there?
She's like, it's a joke.
I love his doctor so much. What's his name here? Anupam Kher plays Dr. Patel. And it's just so wonderful how he kind of, and completely inappropriately kind of, you know, joins his personal gang.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely inappropriate. But at the same time, I can't help it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
And the Eagle stuff, like, I'm a football guy. So often movies really portray sports and football and fandom really unrealistically. And he just nailed it in this movie, I think.
Really? See,
oh, yeah.
I grew up and my whole family was super into football. Like Christmas Day, like the whole family sat down and watched it and I hated it. Uh-huh. I was so bored and I swore up and down I would never end up with someone who liked football. And then I actually started playing flag football last year before COVID.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it fun?
It is so much fun. I actually finally understand like why people like football.
Well, you know, I'm the sort of football fan who's not I'm not wearing jerseys and painting my face and stuff like that. But it's interesting that sports, I think people that aren't into it don't understand that it can be the great uniter. Like I've always said, like you'll never see racial and political harmony like you will at a Falcons game where you've got some clearly distant Georgia sort of white redneck with his jersey on, like jumping up and down and hugging, you know, the black guy from the inner city of Atlanta with his jersey on and high fiving. And like, politics go out the door and race and socioeconomics for a few hours. And it's pretty nice scene to be in. That's why the tailgating scene, when those guys, the racist guys, attacked the guys with the Indian guys. Mm-hmm. I guess that happened some. This is Philly, so you never know, but it's not usually how it is. Usually people come together for their team and it's kind of a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene actually, like, those guys rewatching it, I think I even got angrier than I did the first time. Like, I was angry the first time, but especially
this. Bad men.
Bad men. It, also, because, like, I love Doctor. The Doctor, like, he's one of my favorite people. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, stop it. Yeah. I think also seeing him, like, go to Pat's house and seeing the family, I feel like from his perspective, I was like wondering what was going on in his head, if he was like, ah, I finally understand. Like, seeing how his family acted and everything, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's true. I mean, I guess it's super inappropriate, but so inappropriate. It's insightful.
Yeah. Insightful, but so inappropriate. But you know what? It's it's a movie.
And Jennifer Lawrence is just, I mean, she's a great actor, but she's so easy to kind of crush on because she's beautiful, and just even when you sort of know about her personal life, she just seems like she gives no fucks. She's real. She says what she wants and like just has a lot of attractive qualities as a human, I think. And they come through in this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like you're describing her character in the movie.
It sort of is. Yeah, sort of a Jennifer Lawrence type, it feels like.
No, she definitely does. I don't know, like especially the scene in the diner, it really came through.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But
that scene was awesome.
That scene was awesome. However, how that escalated was definitely difficult. I think that was another one of those, like, how I'm dealing with something is not how I actually am. And that's why she checked herself when the cop came over.
Yeah. And then, you know, after that, when she starts screaming that you're assaulting me. And, like, I think instantly when that cop shows up, realizes what she's done and then saves him and calms him down with the breathing, like, again, that's another sort of David O. Russell chaos sequence played out, ending in that really calming way. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and they also do like interesting camera work too whenever he's kind of going through that, like the kind of almost like a fishbowl kind of effect, I think, is what it was. Yeah, just to kind of give you an idea. And I'm like, whenever you do kind of go into those trigger modes, like that was, you know, it can look like that sometimes. Like you're like, wait, what's happening? So... Yeah.
Yeah. The handheld camera, like he brings a lot of energy to those scenes just in a filmmaking sense. I have here one of my favorite lines too from their first meetings when she's, you know, they're kind of trying to out crazy each other or not out crazy each other, make the other one seem like they're crazier than them.
Yeah.
And she goes, "You say more inappropriate things than appropriate things. You scare people." So funny. And he does, you know, but it's like you just want them to be okay. You want them to, you know, that's why the end, that shot of them in the chair together is so beautiful. But it's also just like, you know, what a complicated, tough path there is ahead of them.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's the thing is like this movie really wasn't about, you know, the big finale scene, right? Like with a dance off or anything. And it wasn't, that's not what it was about. It was about like showing this complication in general. And then, yes, they found peace, but like, you know, it's not done, you know? And like, but that's okay. And they both understand it. I think it's about really coming to understanding the other person and where they're coming from rather than seeing just like, oh, the mental illness and, you know, these people are crazy or you're just out of the loony bin. It's more of like, hey, I see you and I see who you really are, including like this, you know, thing that you have to deal with because that's what you have to deal with. Which is why
I feel like that's all people want.
Yeah. No, definitely. And I also feel like, you know, that's, and one of my favorite lines is at the very, you know, at the very end when he goes, you know, the world will break your heart 10, you know, 10 ways from Sunday. And it's like, it's so true. And he's like, I think in that moment, he's kind of telling you, it's like, yeah, this is like a nice, peaceful moment, but this isn't it. Like, there's going to be more things that are going to happen. But I think it's just like, we're all kind of looking for that moment of peace of like, you know, it's just a regular day for them. It's not, there wasn't anything major happening. There wasn't anything, whatever. They're just, you know, chilling, hanging around, like, and you know, the two of them in the chair, they're just having a moment. And that's, it's beautiful. Like they just found that moment of peace and all the chaos that they have to deal with.
Yeah, it's a hopeful moment. It doesn't come across to me as, you know, these people are both mentally ill, but that's been solved because of love.
Yeah. No, it's definitely not solved.
But Hollywood does that. And I think David O. Russell was smart enough to give you this really sweet, hopeful thing. But you know that it's going to be tough for them. And, you know, where are these people in 10 years? I want to say they're together and have a couple of kids and their life is a roller coaster, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because like, what's that movie? It's Kind of a Funny Story, which was also a book that became a movie about the kid going into the mental hospital. Do you know that one?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Who was in that?
Zach Galifianakis is in it. Plays a bit more serious.
I did not see that. Was that good?
Honestly, it was good. I actually went back and read the book after that one. And it was pretty on par. But that's one of the ones where Hollywood kind of like was like, oh, hey, you know, You solved it a little bit, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but that one deals with slightly other things than this one does. But yeah, that one is more of a example of like, oh, now this is solved, but not this movie. This movie stands separate. I would recommend going back and watching that, though. I'll probably go back and rewatch it now, too.
Now that I see it, I recognize it. I think we should talk about the music for a sec, too, because, boy, the music in it is great. The score is really, really lovely. Like, I really love that score that's kind of just throughout. But one of my favorite cues is when it's actually right after the diner date with the raisin bran and the tea, which is so funny. And then they have the big blow up in front of the movie theater. She calms them down. And then you get that Led Zeppelin cue. And then I think what follows is the scene at home, the really rough scene, when that song just sort of starts to build, and it's just a perfect use of music, I think.
Yeah, no, and that's another thing. So music never gets really heavy or really, you know, it's like super angsty rock or anything. It always like, they kind of let the scene speak for themselves, but let the music build underneath. And then how they'll like also go into this kind of dead silence afterward. Like they'll hit this point and they'll just cut it off immediately. And it's just a way to like make you focus on whatever is happening. And I noticed that happened a few different times throughout, but I loved it. And I loved like the music that they danced to, how they use that music from the West Side Story. And
the White Stripes.
Yeah.
Their dance was just ridiculous and great. Like that's when the movie really, like I loved the movie anyway, up until that point. But when the dance stuff starts in earnest, when he meets her over at the studio, it really like kind of ramps it up to the next level, I think, of lovable, and it gives them something to focus on. It brings them together. And I think it makes it all the better that they're neither one of them are very good dancers.
No, they're not. No,
they're okay, but you know.
Yeah, they're okay. I actually read up and it turned out that they actually did the final dance scene first when filming. And so they actually so they did all the learning how to dance scenes after they had learned how to dance, and that was actually harder for them to pretend to be bad at it because at that point they had already like learned all the steps, and so they're like, wait, what? And so they had to go back and like figure that out.
Yeah. And when Chris Tucker comes over.
Oh, yeah, and he's like, friend with a capital F.
Yeah. And he goes, put a little black in it. He goes, what do you even mean? He's like, you know damn well what I mean. He's just so great. Every time he comes on the scene, it's like, I just wanted more Chris Tucker in this movie.
Honestly, yeah. He was phenomenal. I loved him so much.
Let's talk about sort of the ending. The third act is so great, and it kind of all coalesces with this parlay bet on the football game.
Ooh, stress me out.
And now there's actually money on the dance competition, which is just, you know, unbelievable.
That stressed me out so bad. Like, it's one of those, like, I can't ever stop. Like, every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, y'all are stressing me. But, like,
it is super stressful because they're not good dancers. And I love when they were working out, like, what the score was going to be. And Brad Cooper's just like, we'll be lucky if we get a 5. And she's like, we could definitely get a 5. Like, they're both in such different places in their, like, kind of reality or confidence level about their dance.
Yeah. But I love how she's the one who comes in and is just like, let me tell you actually how well like the Eagles are doing every time we hang
out. That's one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Oh yeah, and it just like shuts De Niro down. He goes, okay, I like you. Like changes his attitude about her. It's like, all right.
I love that scene so much.
And then also like it turns out like the mother actually had a hand in everything with them like meeting. Yeah. I was like, whoa, okay, like that really changed everything. So, but yeah, that third act right before leading up to them dancing, it was so much. I don't even know. And then him like recognizing about the letter, that was a big one too.
Yeah, the letter. So she has ended up being the one who wrote the letter from Nikki. The way they played out at the end was just so beautiful. He knew that. He knew it for a week. He goes after. I mean, that's such a movie trope, you know, to run after the girl at the end. But it's a trope for a reason. It's because that's what people want to see. And this is one of the great all-time go-get-the-girl moments in movies.
Well, I also think it works, too, because, you know, towards the beginning when he was running, she was running after him. And so now, you know, and so now it switches as he ran after her. So,
I think about that.
Yeah, I really feel like there's more fairness to that scene and that aspect. But I don't like, so with bipolar, you have manic episodes and depressive episodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And manic aren't always fun, but it is like when they show like the sleeplessness and his paranoia and, you know, these unfiltered, you know, thoughts coming out of his mouth and all these things, like that's typically manic. And so if you notice, like the first 2/3 of the movie is like these really kind of high intensity scenes, like what's happening. Like, yeah, you have these down parts to show what happened, but it's always like something happens and like it intensifies. He goes, I'm sorry. And then like you have the down to like show he recognizes like, oh, man, like I shouldn't have done that. Or, you know, same for her. But the moment about the letter, which is, I think, like, you know, the last act like we're talking about, if you notice this quietness comes over him and it feels like, I'm not sure if this is what they're trying to do, but to me, it feels like him finally coming out of a manic episode where this fixation of like trying to reach his point and he's realizing, wait, I just need to let this go. And that fixation like dissipates. And now it's him being able to move forward and it kind of brings him out of the manic episode. And as someone who's been in manic episodes, like sometimes that's what it takes. Like when you come out of them, it's like you're able to move forward. Yeah, because like sometimes I have fixation and I just can't let something go and it causes me lots of stress and stuff. But when I finally can, I start to feel better and like I can come out of it. And of course, like medication helps. But yeah, but it's like he's coming out of it and he's kind of coming more into like a balance of like where he's at with the illness. And I notice that kind of softness till the end of the movie. And like that's kind of the same note that they end on, is like this balance rather than this like high intensive energy. And I just thought that was really, really nice. Way just to kind of like bring it up here and just bring it down. And again, I don't know if they did that on purpose, but that's something I felt from it.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm sure it was on purpose. That last shot, I mean, and not the last shot of the movie, but when he catches up to her, that wonderful, beautiful Christmas street and the camera spinning around them when they have that great, great, great first kiss finally. And he says his letter out loud. It's just, I can't even take it. I'm about to cry right now. And then he does something really interesting with the camera there. That camera car just fucking hauls ass away from them down the street. And it's a really unusual camera move for that kind of thing. Like you would expect like this beautiful crane shot sort of lifting away up into the heavens or something like that. And it's just a camera on the back of a camera car just peeling out of there. I'd never seen that kind of used that way. I thought it really worked, though.
Oh, no, it definitely worked. I never actually really thought about that. I guess to me it was just like, okay, this happened, and now, like, we're going to move forward to, like, what's next.
I think that's probably what it symbolized.
Yeah, now, yeah. I also
hitting the gas.
Yeah, we're like, all right, let's go. Like, we're out of here. We're done.
I also really love the moment when the free dance finale, when they're walking through the place holding hands and he goes, wait, what is this? He goes, what, you're doing it? I'm not doing it. I thought you were doing it. They just like found themselves holding hands and are blaming each other for it. I just thought that was adorable.
It's so cute. They're so cute. I also like how her jacket's just a little too big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like she doesn't quite fit her. And I'm just like, this is awesome.
Yeah, and the clumsiness of the dance when they try the big move and she just,
okay,
you know, he ends up face to crotch.
I still can't watch that. Honestly, to this day when that scene comes on, I still have to like cover my face because I get secondhand embarrassment so bad. I'm just like, I can't handle. Yeah, I know. I'm one of those people. It's a big one. I'm just like, I can't do it.
It's pretty bad. The way they handled it was so funny because they were kind of like, we're meaning to do this a little bit. And everyone was like, what are they doing? What an interesting move. and them crawling around on the floor at each other. It's just, it's one of, I'm going to learn that whole routine with my wife. We're going to do that one day.
That's what you guys should do for Halloween next year, and dress up and then do that routine. Yeah. Or this year, we're in 2021 now. I keep forgetting. Yeah.
What year is it even?
Yeah.
Speaking of Halloween, I love when movies are sort of framed by, non-obviously by holidays, and it has Halloween in here and then very purposefully Christmas later. And so you just sort of, you know what you're dealing with, you're dealing with a few months here, a couple of months basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like in between all of that is all them practicing at her place and stuff. I loved, one of my favorite shots was kind of the quietness before the dance where they showed like the outside of her garage, but there was like this still scene of like the inside of her garage with the dance floor and her shoes and just like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's some of my favorite shots in there. I'm just like, it just feels like very peaceful before everything happens. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes like the small moments like that in movies like this enrich it so much. You know, a shot of an empty dance studio, like it can be very impactful. I love that about movies.
Yeah. No, and they definitely did a good job with that here. So, and yeah, I don't know.
And then, you know, they end in a very wonderfully romantic way of that house full with that voiceover on a Sunday afternoon with the Eagles on, and the doctor is there, and then Chris Tucker is there finding out how to make the Krabby Snacks and homemade, which like my wife and I said that for like a year afterward.
I love that she makes a Krabby Snacks. Like every time I hear it, I think of SpongeBob SquarePants, like Krabby Patties, but she every scene, she's always talking about her Krabby Snacks.
Well, and it's funny because like, I said earlier about the sort of misfits who find each other and Brad and Jennifer, but at the end there, they're all kind of the misfits together, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, they've all got their issues, they've all got their struggles, and they're all together, and not in a way that's, like I said, like it's solved, it's perfect, we're all great now. But it's like, nah, but we got each other, you know? We got each other's backs.
Yeah. And it's just like I feel like full and warm when I watch it. Like I always come to the end and I'm like, I feel really full, and I love that feeling. I feel like that's a house full of love and warmth, and like, I don't know, that's totally what I want to feel when I finish this movie, you know? And then you always just end on that good note. And it wasn't like this completion like we talked about of like, oh, everything's okay, but it's just like they found the love and the warmth amidst everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just so gorgeous. What a great movie. It's been a while since I've seen it, and I saw it, I think, at least two times kind of back then. And I was, when you picked it, I was like, oh fuck yeah, I haven't seen this movie in a while.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, so I don't know if he likes this movie, but I want to watch it. Cause it turns out we have a mutual friend in common. So I don't know if Clay told you to tell you I said hi.
Clay Miller?
Yeah.
Oh, no way. How do you know Clay?
He's my bartender. he's my bartender at one of the places I go to. And so he was like, oh, I saw you as a mutual friend and Chuck. And I
was Cabbage
like,
Town?
Yeah, in Cabbage Town at Milltown.
Okay.
Yeah, and he said that he had recommended you a movie and you're like, nope. And I was like, okay, well, I don't know what that movie is either. So
that's so funny. I went camping with Clay like 3 weeks ago.
That's what it was just after y'all went camping.
Oh, that's great. Clay and I went to college together. I'm sure you know all this, but
that's what he told me.
For listeners, he's a photographer. He's a great photographer. He's a pet photographer. And I need to send you, I'll send you the pictures he took of my dogs. They're amazing.
Please do. I did not know he was a photographer. That's awesome.
Yeah, Clay's great. Bartender photographer. Actually, it's photographer bartender. But, yeah, he's one of my old best friends. It's funny, all my friends from college almost ended up moving within like 2 or 3 miles from each other in Atlanta, and not even on purpose. We just sort of are magnets to each other. And I think, Clay lives over in Kirkwood. I live about a mile and a half away in Eastlake. I see him walking his dog all the time. He's the one that had the dog Bro.
Oh, I know. Oh, got
That's
you.
So funny.
Well, Atlanta's like a small big town, so like,
yeah,
it's definitely one of those. So, but yeah, I don't know. I thought it was really cool. Okay, I'm gonna have to bring up about his dog Bro then. Be like, show me pictures.
Yeah, Bro is not with us anymore. It's very sad.
Oh no.
But he's got his great new Doberman buddy, who is just a big 100-pound Doberman who like looks scary as hell, but he's the biggest sweetheart. He came camping with us.
Aw, that's sweet.
It was great. I got to hang out with Buddy. Well, that's so cool. By the way, were you ever in the office when Bradley Cooper came in at all?
I was not, and I'm so upset. I missed it by like this much, and I like to this day I'm just like, what the heck? And isn't it like an ongoing joke that like one of our bosses is best friends with him, or he is best friends?
It's not a joke. It's real. Like, that's why he was there. I mean, I've talked about it before, but our boss, the head cheese, Connell, is his best friend from college.
That's ridiculous.
Like, best man at his wedding. And it was funny. I was driving. This was like 3 or 4 years ago. Oh, actually, it was longer than that because it wasn't long after this movie. I was about a mile away from my house driving home, and I passed somebody jogging, and I went to Emily. I was like, that was fucking Brad Cooper. She was like, no, it wasn't. I went, oh, it is, because like, I know how he jogs.
Because
we just saw that movie. He wasn't wearing a plastic bag, but I was like, that was totally Brad Cooper. And I said, I guarantee you he's here with Connell. And I texted Connell, I was like, is Brad in town staying at your house? And he went, yes. And I went, I just saw him jogging. And he went, yep.
So does he jog with a plastic bag or what in real life?
No, okay. There was no plastic bag, but he had that same gait and that same goddamn handsome face.
Oh, he's so handsome.
I haven't met him either. Connell's always like, oh, Brad's cool. Like, we'll have to bring him by next time he's in town. And then he comes in town and he does it. And I'm like a schoolgirl. I'm like, well, why didn't you bring Brad by? I want to meet him.
Oh, well, if it makes you feel any better, that's how some people are when they find out I work with you. They're like, wait, Chuck? And I'm like,
please. I'm no Brad Cooper. He's amazing. He's so talented. I just think like when you're wrapped up in like a handsome package like that, it's hard to, I mean, trust me, I don't feel sorry for the guy or anyone who is superlatively attractive, but you know, he's more than a pretty face.
Yeah.
I thought A Star Is Born was amazing. And I think he's got great director chops and writer chops and acting chops. And, you know, I think I'm in love.
If you're listening to this, Bradley.
I know. Just stop by.
Yeah, just swing
just
by.
Just jog by again.
6 feet.
Well, Miranda, this was so much fun. It's great to get to know you better. It's funny. I saw you yesterday. You're one of the only humans outside of my family I've seen in person in weeks.
Oh, so wow. Yeah.
I recorded yesterday and you were in there. So it was
nice
to see you.
Yeah, I had to swing by. Actually, I ended up not getting my internet set up. So I had to watch the movie on my phone last night at home. Yeah, I know. I know. I was like, this is fine. It's whatever.
But, well, you'd seen it so many times, I guess.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
I bet that last shot looked great on your phone. Well, this was great. I'd love to have you back sometime.
Absolutely.
I would love to consider you sort of a rotating cast member.
No, I would love that. I had such a good time, especially like, you know, thank you so much for willing to talk about one of my absolute favorite movies in the world.
Of course. It's wonderful. I'm sure everyone has seen it. I think this will be a big favorite because people really love this movie.
Yeah.
And those episodes always go over really well. Yeah. So thank you for coming on.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Movie Crush is produced and written by Charles Bryant and Noel Brown, edited and engineered by Seth Nicholas Johnson, and scored by Noel Brown here in our home studio at Ponce City Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy.
Yeah.
Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.